Anyone have something to say or ask?
Yesterday in my interview, you invited me to go into the brokenhearted place. And
I think if you just speak a tiny bit louder, it'll be easier to hear.
Okay. Yesterday in my interview, Jaya invited me to go to a brokenhearted place that over the past year or so has been more shelled off and more, I've been expressing more anger and rage and violence. And so today I had that as my full intention, and as soon as I sank in, like just a little bit below consciousness, my body let out this sound. I was like, oh gosh, this is so inappropriate. And I clenched my body and just, you know, this is silent, this silent retreat. And so I clenched my body, and then as soon as I relaxed again and went deeper, again, it happened 6 or 7 times, the lunchtime meditations, sound, the moan. And I went to Claudia, because I was like, I probably can't participate in this retreat if I keep this wild and appropriate sounding. And she just, you know, lovingly suggested that it could possibly be perfect, and just to and that I'm welcome here, and that my body has a wisdom, and so the last meditation, I as I was settling in, I remembered that I have my Wonder Woman underwear on, and I thought, oh gosh, that's the problem. I've been Wonder Woman. I've just been this one, and then I had the shift in perception. Why don't you allow Wonder Woman to be holding your hand? And with that, I just had all these tears just streamed down, and I had the ability to relax and be vulnerable and just rest and feel like a sense of safety. It was almost in the previous meditation as if every time I started to soften into it, that sound would sort of bounce me back out of that place, but then Wonder Woman helped me.
First the Wonder Woman named Claudia, and then the Wonder Woman inside you.
when I did allow myself to sink down, I was breathing, just letting myself take these really full, deep breaths, and I would feel at the end of my inhale and at the end of my exhale, my heart kind of move in my chest. And even though the invitation is not to be reading, I'm ravenously reading the book about the heart right now, and shifting into heart consciousness. And so,
interesting that you say ravenously.
Ravenously reading on the pigs.
When we have our raven trickster. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. And I was getting that I was just kind of giving myself this medicine or receiving it from my higher self, and my heart was really like just kind of allowing an armor to peel away. And the last little bit was then I had images of floating in the pond and an inner tube, and a baby white shark came, and I had emergency things to pull and they weren't working, and I shouted to you and to Jennifer to come and help me, and the bell sounded. So there's definitely a lot that's shifting for me, and I'm really grateful. And just there's so much imagery with what I just said, but to physically feel in my heart, like basically I feel like I'm being resuscitated. First, just with the days of just rest, and now just just will be remembering these tools too. To nurture.
And of course, it goes perfectly also with one of the poems that came for today. That just that, like, where there is the gratitude for all our work that we've done and for the tools that help us work, and then also how, like, the heart comes to life in a new way. And it's not even just like getting back to where you were, I don't think. It's like, it's not only just that good. It's like a new life that comes about, not just because we chipped away, but chipping away helped that. Helps that. Thank you. Anyone else want to say or ask?
I would like to share a thought that I had yesterday in the evening. So I was thinking about how I might explain to others about what we've done this week mm-hmm. together. And first I thought about my partner and mm-hmm. how excited I would be to tell him mm-hmm. what we've done. And I imagine him being very supportive, as is his way. But then I thought also about the people who might not be as flexible in their understanding
yeah.
of what we've done, and how I was imagining telling my dad that I spent a week and mostly in a room with about 15 other people that I had never met previously, many of whom I'd not have a conversation with, and mm-hmm. most of whom I've not even had eye contact with, mm-hmm. Lying on the floor, being still. And how he or others might think, there was a word this morning, absurd, mm-hmm. that it might sound absurd or that it might sound impossible.
Yeah.
That this could happen. Mm-hmm. That we could all join together and do this amazing thing. Mm-hmm. But it's not impossible.
No.
It is happening. Mm-hmm. It's very possible. And so then that caused me to think, well, what else is possible? Mm. And for a brief moment, it sort of went in a direction of more of like greed and power, sort of like, well, if this is possible, what else can we do?
Yeah.
We can save the world. This is great. Gratefully, that sort of mm-hmm. went away.
You're a Wonder Woman.
And it was more of a like quiet, like whispering to myself, what is possible in this stillness? Mm-hmm. What else is possible? Mm-hmm. What thing that seems, because it's so unknown
yeah.
and so foreign, mm-hmm. that it seems impossible, mm-hmm. but might actually be so possible that it's comical.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that they made me think of dying, mm-hmm. of death and dying, mm-hmm. of the people that I love, mm-hmm. my partner, mm-hmm. and my dog, mm-hmm. and my inflexible father, and that there's maybe this possibility that not everything. And then that just kind of blew my mind, so I had to remodel my kitchen. So it's not as if, like, oh, I've solved everything, I can go back home and start saving the world again and think Stonehouse, and that was great. But just sort of like, Like, not that moment in The Wizard of Oz where they pull back the curtain and Dorothy realizes, oh, it's not so scary. But just that moment where you realize there is a curtain.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe there's a curtain, or it's possible there's a curtain.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's possible that lying in this darkness, that there is a light that can get switched
yeah.
on. And there's still fear, but maybe it's possible that I don't have to white knuckle my way through it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that isn't the answer. Maybe that hasn't served me as well as I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's possible that there's another way to be both brokenhearted and whole.
Yeah.
And that it's happening. So I just wanted to share that and gratitude
yeah.
to all of us.
Been somewhat of a theme today, that brokenhearted and whole. But I just want to say again how I love that, like, for now, indulging means like going to make lamps in our head while we take a break from all the joy and expense of this. And the lightness and absurdity part, like, where there's a sense of, like, that it could be even okay to say to our dad, who will laugh, that, yeah, it is absurd. But then, like, there's, like, no denying that it's absurd. And it's impossible, and yet. And then there's the chance of the father being like, oh, but you do look, like, really, really well. You seem really, really... And also, it does that kind of possibility of the absurd, and where one kind of absurd, like lying in the room doing nothing with total strangers, morning to night, is there, and is this my theme song this year, is that the surreal is the new real. So we can say, like, the absurd is the new whatever real. But from there, what's really absurd also can, like you're saying about the curtain, and like, you've been tricking me my whole life. That you have all the power and I've been powerless, and actually something else is in charge. So where somehow that the laughter at what's truly absurd can also come when we let this be absurd and impossible and yet. And I think that absolutely goes with how, as one of my great friends says, like, heart broken, heart open, that it doesn't need to make sense, but that loving, letting all this love be streaming through us and letting it be as strong as it is, like that river, that it could, it would also wash us away without some of the wildness and the kind of practice, basically. And it can wash quite a bit away of what's unnecessary when we're in the stillness, a wild stillness or a still wildness. But just feeling that way, that with love, and love that is moved by specific things in people, being touched by specific things in people, could go towards what someone today called melancholy. It could go towards the kind of bittersweet thing. But it can also be where I don't know how to say, we fill our heart, or it's allowed to 100% appreciate in this moment. Instead of that, like, oh, I might lose them or it, or I already did, or, and sort of betraying the love that we're saying that we're true to by worrying about losing that. And just starting to feel, letting the surf wash us back to the love. And then we start to really get to feel what came a little bit yesterday, where I always go to the trees, so I'm looking out there. I love trees. In loving whatever you love. So for me, trees are easy. In loving what you love. That in the loving, where the love is flowing, the thingness of the thing or the separateness of the individual is not. And then as soon as we focus on the thingness of the thing, the separateness of the person, the otherness of the person, the love is not. But it's not therefore an abstract world where there isn't connection to specific people and things. So that's what open heart can be instead of broken heart, when there starts to be more and more wisdom. And it's not to say that there won't be broken heart even when there's a lot of wisdom, but kind of when we get the hang of broken heart, open heart, we can let it stay broken open. And that's where it's like that Shiva, you know, not blinking an eye with through death, like feeling right to the bottom and right to the top, death and life and beyond. So it's like the sense of the seed broken open. Even if there's a cry like that Jamie described, it's not necessarily a problematic cry. So this starts to help a little bit with that investigation of what could be an innocence that leads, that's not an immaturity, so a mature innocence or a wise innocence. An innocence with the sort of feet and the deep intelligence. An innocence that hasn't been sort of, let's call it, protected from life, but is allowed to be in life, and so in harmony with life, to take root in that, and to stretch into that. That it's a staying true to life, or staying true to this, another sentence that I love, we have like broken heart, open heart, there's love the love that loves to love. So there are things that we love to love, but we can love the love that loves to love, and staying true to that. Without dishonoring what we love to love or whom we love to love, but staying true in loving the love that loves to love. It loves to love. No matter if it's like a breaking apart or if it's a in a silent retreat or... Is there any question, or is there another thing to say, especially of all of the loose ends that we've left in our trail over the week? Yeah.
Well, I'm really glad we're having this chance to talk, because I feel like earlier today it's hard for me not to make eye contact. It's really hard for me not to talk. Mm-hmm. I got kicked out of Quaker meeting for talking too much. And so having a chance to share, it was early today that it was the first time I really felt like I was in community with folks here.
Mm-hmm.
Although it had some good eye contact and laughs with folks, sort of. But so that's been a breakthrough. And part of the experience I've been going through the last couple of months has been being cracked wide open. And So hearing that somebody else, you know, you're not alone. I got my Wonder Woman underwear on too. But I've carried around a hell of a lot of rage.
A hell of a lot of what?
Rage.
Yeah.
And never, almost never unleashed it until recently. I did it to somebody who least deserved it.
Yeah.
And there's somebody who stood there for 5 years. And I had dug a pretty deep hole this past year in my work. And I became toxic in every way. And she stood by me. Even though it was killing her to do it. And then she had to step away. And that's when I uncorked. And I turned on her the kind of rage I had absorbed growing up. And I had a grandfather who was a very simple man. He was a Sicilian barber. Worked hard enough, along with my aunt, to put 4 kids through college. And he knew when it was worth it to cry. Mm. He would, every time he said grace, went up to the table. We always knew it was coming. you have this 18-year-old boy sitting around the table, and their grandfather's about to cry again. When he thanks God again. Pretend we were embarrassed. And then we start crying, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, all along, Elizabeth had been offering me this kind of path. She had offered, and then this past year, she had pretty much all but begged me to get back on it. Because I had been on it when I was in my 20s. And I lived in Chapel Hill for 11 years, and I only went back to Maryland. When my 20-year-old cousin committed suicide. And I carried that around for a long time. The fact that this kid had despair.
Mm-hmm.
That he'd reached out, or tried to reach out, to me and others, and found this lacking. And I think he may have been able to, not to be able to face who he was, because he didn't think his family mm-hmm. could accept who he was. And I always thought it a terrible thing, to not to be who you are, and say what you think, and say what you feel. And then I realized I was doing the same thing to Elizabeth. So, the last Friday was my third yoga session ever. And at the end, during her quiet time, I had this vision of Elizabeth. And I just wept like a baby because I realized that she had been born from this.
What was the last part? All these opportunities?
That we had both missed.
Mm-hmm.
And that she had missed because I was so shy. to go away from somebody I care about and not tell them I love them. Because what's the point? So while I'm down here, I've started to write a lot of bad poetry. And I've realized that I'm really good at writing bad poetry. And being able to talk here about other people's stories has been very helpful.
Yeah.
And I've talked to friends in ways that I haven't talked to them before about where I am and what I'm going through. I've talked to strangers about it too. And every time they open up to me,
yeah.
And I learn more about friends I've known for 26 years
yeah.
that I've known before. And that's been one of the best things.
Yeah.
Sorry about the long soliloquy.
Beautiful.
We're not alone.
Yeah. And also the mystery of being, ending up in this room, like, together, like, from all these different places, from someone who lives nearby but didn't know about this until she heard Claudia on the radio, like a few weeks ago, I think. And someone who's, you know, used to live here, but the ways that the stories and so many levels of our lives really are woven together, and sometimes to get a glimpse of that is precious. And from what you've said, that it's so striking, that sense of wishing to honor that each person could feel that they could be themselves. Even if in our family that wasn't encouraged or allowed, which often it isn't, of course. And also, like, having been broken open, what sometimes spills out, how that can be a contagion of openness. And then again, where that openness wouldn't necessarily, but sometimes does allow, like, the shifts of the heart that were just needed, or that sprouting that is not in our hands to, we can't force a sprout to sprout. We can just try to give good conditions. So those two things, like the good conditions that would be as much as possible encouraging us each to know what we are, so that it's easier to be what we are, and that it's not, maybe growing up it's important to have that sense of being able to act the way we want and say what we want and feel what we want, and often that doesn't happen, but as the maturity comes, it's maybe more of investigating what is this. And it's not that it has to be said, but that it could be when it's needed. So providing the conditions part, and then the crying at grace when the food's on the table. Knowing when to cry. Beautiful. So we could read the poem. I guess I just want to ask again if there's anything left from the previous talks, Sedna and Indra and Bhrigu and Kapil and all of these friends, family, from the week.
I think I was like going in and out about how that death of the 60,000 sons was healing for them. Did you say something?
It wasn't healing for them, but they got healed because of someone who came later. Yeah. It wasn't healing for them. They were just...
Okay.
They were gone in a way that they couldn't move on. They were just gone.
Okay.
So that's the kind of moment that sometimes happens when we're in shock, that we can feel, by contrast, when we're in shock and paralyzed, by contrast, we can feel what would have been possible, what is possible when we're living. And it's mostly those just daily moments, like here we are at the table again and there's food, here the feet are on the ground again. Colors. sounds. These seem to be things that may not be possible when we've died. So there may be something in there that's necessary to enrich us while we're living. And so a little more, even more encouragement to take that other kind of thing of how big it is to love what we love to love. And to not get trapped in thinking that it's really about the thing or the person or not about them. But this, whatever, what's that like light that comes through the leaf or the face or the hand or the touch or the voice or... And how that brings out even more appreciation of the form through which the light is shining. So that's how they got healed, as someone called that down at the river Ganga, the sky river, sky Ganga, got called down through the power of someone's meditation, who came later and didn't feel comfortable with those 60,000 just being gone. In some versions of the story also, there it becomes a drought, like there's then the effect in the ecology of that. But just to call it down, it needs to be more nuanced and skillful than just calling down life power. So then on Shiva's hair, the force was absorbed through the power of practice and wildness and being at home with death, so that it could be a river that is sanctifying and healing. A life-bringing river. So another way of feeling into the innocence is where there's a sense of, that I said yesterday at the end, I think, about that intensity without a hurry. So, but the word intensity so easily could get us in a focus on something. That's our reference point for intensity, is that we're intensely focused on something. So also not that. So we could say energy, where again, today, from yesterday till today, like energy filling us and filling the room, and sometimes that feels too much, and so we could be again distracted or again turbulent emotions or again just as we had a few days ago, and it was hard to like absorb that life energy in and let it do its work, let it have its way, sort of, so things melt and shift and fall away and get revealed as important and life happens. Living happens. So finding way of absorbing intensity as it starts to arise through our practice, through doing the absurd, through just doing nothing. And not escape and not try to shut it off. So another way to say it is power without force, or power without aggression. It's another way to start to feel innocence that could lead. And I asked us on the very first evening to leave room for what are our assumptions, expectations, and sort of deep intentions, but also to leave room for what has space for being without intention, even without the best intention, just to leave space. So this is another Wendell Berry poem, as I read last night, or said last night, from this book, Sabbaths. And if you've been here for the weekend also, I read one or two poems from here as well. But if you weren't, I just need to say that this is another one of those impossibilities and that I never knew about this book until I got to Atlanta just before here to visit my dad and his wife. And this book was on the table, whether on purpose or not, I don't know. I need to ask them if they put it there for me, which they may have. But even so, how did I not know about this book? If I've been teaching deep rest retreats for 10 years, and I love Wendell Berry, And what is Sabbath but rest? And it's like, is this real? Sabbath? Wendell Berry? Like, it's like a cartoon of impossible goodness. And then that there, it's described as a book of his most formal work. And so, and I have this fascination now, and it seems like it's kind of about time that we start to have some formal poetry again, where there's rhyming and meter and not just the sort of explosion of free, which I love as well. But so this is a longer poem than I would have preferred for a Dharma talk, but I'd like to read the whole thing and then kind of let stand out what stands out for today, if that's bearable. So this is number two of Sabbath poems that were written in 1979. Again, like, how did I not hear about this? Another Sunday morning comes, and I resume the standing Sabbath of the woods, where the finest blooms of time return, and where no path is worn, but wears its makers out at last, and disappears in leaves of fallen seasons. The tracked rut fills and levels. Here nothing grieves in the risen season. Past life lives in the living. Resurrection is in the way each maple leaf commemorates its kind by connection. Don't try to catch it. Just get the flow of the sound. The way he's writing it, by the way, it's hard to come out because it's this overlapping flow where the rhyme is there, but it's not the end of a thought or a sentence, which is what he's talking about as well, that there's not an end. So let's see. So he's standing in the woods, apparently. And he's seeing how easily the forest can swallow the tracks of time. So no path is worn but wears its makers out at last and disappears in leaves of fallen seasons. The tracked rut fills and levels. Here nothing grieves in the risen season. Past life lives in the living. Resurrection is in the way each maple leaf commemorates its kind by connection, outreaching, understanding. What rises, rises into comprehension and beyond. Even falling raises in praise of light. What is begun is unfinished. And so the mind that comes to rest among the bluebells comes to rest in motion, refined by alteration. The bud swells, opens, makes seed, falls, is well, being becoming what it is. Miracle and parable, exceeding thought, because it is immeasurable. The understanding, the understander encloses understanding, thus darkens the light. I'll read that one part again. The understander encloses understanding, thus darkens the light. We can stand under no beam that is not dimmed by us. The mind that comes to rest is tended in ways that it cannot intend, is born, preserved, and comprehended by what it cannot comprehend. Your Sabbath, Lord, thus keeps us by your will, not ours. And it is fit our only choice should be to die into that rest or out of it. How is it to listen to that? Like, it doesn't, the unendingness. So the two parts that I mostly want to bring up and out. The bud swells, opens, makes seed, falls, is well, being becoming what it is. Miracle and parable, exceeding thought, because it is immeasurable. Then there's the part about the understanding. Understander encloses understanding and darkens the light. So that's when we love to love what we love, and then we get tripped up, but like worrying that we're going to lose it. Or being loyal to what we think the person wants of us, and then, mm-hmm. or what we think we want of them, or wait a second. Weren't we talking about love? Maybe we shouldn't talk about love. Maybe we should just love the love that loves to love. So, but letting it be immeasurable, that's the practice, really. To let our experience as it does leave room for things that are limited to have their immeasurableness. And so letting our experience leave room for immeasurable. Which means that the mind is not the king. And then we can even start to rest and question, what is the mind? What is that? The mind that comes to rest is tended in ways that it cannot intend, and is born, it's B-O-R-N-E, like, it could be that it's born, like given birth to, and it could be that it's like carried along, or both. But that's like we talk, I keep saying bearing the brunt, so it's like being born, our brunt being born. Preserved and comprehended by what it cannot comprehend. So I love how we've come across along the way several of the things that felt important to say. In ways that we couldn't have intended. But that sense of the impossible being what happens, what can happen. And the impossible including, or we can say the miraculous, being about letting what is dying die. And in that dying, just like in the forest where what's dying dies, and even in that dying, that just yesterday I came across an orange leaf on the green grass. And I knew that my son Gam would love that color. It was a really amazing orange, red orange. And just carrying this really soft, tender leaf, if it weren't still so full of water, it would be brown or dry. And it was so flexible and soft and full of color. So intense. And the feeling of holding this leaf as if it were a little, as my son would say, a she. Whose true color is finally showing. Which is my understanding of how it works, is that when the leaves are busy, then they're green. They're busy making food for the tree, so they're green. And then when they rest, their true color shows. And so their movement comes. And so that sense of the joyousness, or that just intensity for no reason. And the sense of not like trying to be myself, but through untrying, myself revealing itself. And to kind of honor that, so we have that absurd and the lightness, the playfulness, that helps miracles happen, helps the absurd and the impossible happen so that we can laugh about it. But also leaving room for that, it feels like that, especially important in the United States of America. And I don't mean the politics, which is what you might think when I say the name of the nation, but I mean in the spiritual realm. Like really keeping that temple where that lamp is inside you, that is in touch with and is about the deep, like, spiritual nature of any activity, of any being, of any form. So that lamp, like, in our belly, that temple in our belly, and that playfulness, like, that can reveal that intensity that has, it doesn't know where it's going to land. It's not saying, like, my truth, my, what I really want is to land over there. Or we find out what we are by letting it happen, by letting it fall. So that being myself is not an agenda, but it is powerful, immeasurably powerful. And we find out what it looks like after or as as it happens. In such like exquisitely beautiful, unexpected ways. And so there is that plugging away, like plugging away, perseverance, nothing like it. When there's no results, when it looks like we're going backwards, when it looks like we're upside down, we're getting worse, and everybody tells us so. Just plugging away. Everybody inside and outside. And again, we're not staying true to some absurd project. But when there is something that is happening and it keeps revealing itself, it keeps emerging, it keeps on going, it keeps on happening, and it is absurd. It is absurd to lie in a room with strangers from morning to evening and sleep, and it's absurd to watch the breath. It's absurd.
It's a lot crazier out there.
Yeah, and it's absurd to be alive, and it's absurd to die. Like, it's absurd, which means there doesn't need to be meaning in the way that we thought. We don't have to have meaning as the leader, or it's another kind of meaning, like that, just the color. It's not that the color means, oh, orange red in the book means, no, it's just, it speaks to us, and we speak breath without words. So the plugging away, and also where something sometimes rises up, just like higher than any of the other daisies in the field or whatever. And there may be a lot of reasons, or there may not be. But sometimes something just really rises up. Actually, I just remembered that I thought it was all in one poem, but there's something else I need to find if I can. Whatever is foreseen in joy must be lived out from day to day. Harvest will fill the barn. For that, the hands must ache, the face must sweat. And yet no leaf or grain is filled by work of ours. The field is tilled and left to grace. That we may reap, great work is done while we're asleep. Another question or light-filled sharing? Yes.
I have a little story just from this morning. I was feeling a lot of really blocked energy, mm-hmm. and so I was lying here and was sort of like
willing it to unblock, and it didn't.
What a surprise.
And then I walked out into the pasture, and I was like, really not, I was not there. I was like in my head and so unblocking things.
Mm-hmm.
And then I ended up having, I mean, there's like so many little encounters in this, but it was like an hour of like pure magic.
Mm-hmm.
Just being there and being with the spider and the leaf and the thing after thing after thing, non-thing after non-thing. And it just was so, it was so wonderful to be looking for something inside and then see it outside.
Yeah.
Like I felt like I was tunneling in and in and in, and then all of a sudden it was like, oh, it's out here, and
mm-hmm.
that's the same thing.
Yeah. Thank you, that's perfect. My job is getting every day easier. Did you have something? Did I see your hand, Claudia?
Oh, I just wanted to say that what I said this morning was how absurdly beautiful it was,
mm-hmm.
what we were doing
mm-hmm.
here. So
I think that is in tune. I don't think people misunderstood.
Yeah, no, I don't think
good.
You weren't here, I wanted to.
Oh, cool.
I didn't want you to think I was saying what an absurd thing this is.
No. And there is a way that it's absurd. Yeah. Which is great. Yeah. Okay, two more.
I had an interesting experience on one of the walking meditations. I was by the forest, the path along the trees, and I came across two snails that appeared to be mating.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, well, geez, I've never seen this before, and when will I ever see this again?
Mm-hmm.
So I sat and I watched. And I was like childlike
mm-hmm.
wonder.
Yeah.
This is amazing
yeah.
to see this. Two snails find each other first off.
Totally.
And how did one catch the other?
It's amazing. You know, it was a total wonder. Thinking about, you know, the chances are of that. So I watched and then I carried on with my walk and I came along the front of the pond, and I'm repeating an affirmation to myself.
Mm-hmm.
I love myself, I forgive myself, or I accept myself, I forgive myself, I love myself, that I'm happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I get to where the grass is really thick, and
mm-hmm.
it's cool, and it's
mm-hmm.
soft, and my feet are really,
mm-hmm.
just really sensing that with my feet.
Mm-hmm.
And I get to saying, I forgive myself, and my heel comes down, and I just hear this crunch. And I look down, and as soon as I heard
mm-hmm.
it, felt it, I knew exactly what it was. It was a snail.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, wow, what are the, it was the creation, destruction,
mm-hmm.
here I am watching.
Sex, death.
Amazing. Creation, sex, then
miraculous, absurdity.
Just destruction. And
mm-hmm.
it really, it was quite
wow.
You know, a really fascinating experience all in one walk.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay, last one, Cheryl.
I'm good.
Okay. You are good.
Well, actually, I guess I can say this.
Yeah.
It's not very deep necessarily, but the word absurdity notes was kind of reminding me of how seems like every year when I do this retreat, I have this great pull to be here and this great desire. It's always so nourishing and so restful, but just I know that there are deep, deep reasons for my coming, yet on the way here, if somebody were to ask me, you know, exactly what I ask myself, what exactly am I going to be working on, what can
mm-hmm.
I, you know, can I pull up these ideas of what is so important, and I can never do that.
Yeah.
You know, and it feels like I have this, like this like I come here with this huge basket and it's filled with all these things that I can't really even identify. I know that they're all really important, but I, looking in the basket, I still can't,
yeah.
I can't name it. You know, I get, there are, you know, tidbits of information, but nothing that really,
yeah.
you know, just comes right out at me.
Yeah.
And it just occurred to me that that's not a bad thing. I've been beating myself up for it.
Mm-hmm.
And now it seems to feel like the openness to just be with all that I am. I mean, everything that I
yeah.
am, I guess, is in that basket.
Yeah.
And it's taken me all these years to to figure
mm-hmm.
that out. It is absurd. I'm getting really like that word.
Yeah.
It can be our sparkle of the year.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Jay, what was the number on that?
Which one?
The
one second
one?
Today. The first one was number 2 of 1979. And
I was just wondering if you
the second one is number 10
okay.
of 1979.
Jay, did you feel underneath that line, whatever the field is tilled and left?
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Definitely. So I'll just read the whole bit that I read. Harvest will fill the barn. For that, the hand must ache, the face must sweat. And yet no leaf or grain is filled by work of ours. The field is tilled and left to grace. That we may reap, great work is done while we're asleep. And so, like as Cheryl was saying, that it can be a good sign that we allow ourselves to feel the pull towards nourishment, just like, how did those snails get together? How do we know what's nourishing? It's not by accident. I'm sure they have something going on there. And to leave room for that to happen, to do the work that's necessary to weave the basket or mend the basket or whatever it is. But and sometimes that's incredibly demanding and sometimes it's incredibly wonderful, but it's not all that's happening by any means. And so there's just that other extra joy of the grain fills. Thank you, Rick.